Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won the first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington. On the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed a shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Both the men and the women's basketball teams failed to crack 60 points. It happened this week. Arkansas men, of course, only scored 51 in a six-point loss against Florida. Admittedly, an ugly game there. Missouri didn't play ugly yesterday. They play a very physical, as I will describe it sometimes, elbows-up style of basketball. And they just held Arkansas without much scoring. 14 points in the first half and a 71-53 loss. Missouri's going to go to the NCAA tournament probably for the fourth consecutive year. I don't know if you could say that about the Florida Gators, who are now 10-5 after defeating Mike Anderson's team. Ty Richardson, quickly come to you here. As you are you're a basketball guy. I was about to use the term expert, but you're on your way.
No.
You're on your way to that level eventually.
Again, no.
Give yourself a couple years, maybe. When I describe the style of basketball as elbows up, what are you thinking? I'm trying to test out the terminology I use for the play-by-play every once in a while. Elbows up to me means something. I wonder if you and I are thinking the same thing.
Is it like defensive stance-wise, like get your butt down, elbows up? Are you referring to that? Or?
Well, first, I remember, you know, elbows up for man-to-man defense. I don't know if I've put it that. It's usually arms out, right? What I'm thinking elbows
make
up
yourself
is,
when you're
fighting for a loose ball, when you grab that rebound and try to clear out the space around you by putting those elbows up and swinging them around a little bit.
Someone's jaw, yeah.
Hey, in women's basketball, sometimes you refer to scratching and clawing. Which I've seen every once in a while. I don't know if I'd go that far with Missouri, but they do play, as some people would say, dirty. I don't think they'd say dirty yesterday. They just were too physical. That's not the case for Florida. Not the case for Florida. I think you look at the issues for Arkansas men's basketball right now, and the issues are, where are points coming from? We're back to that. We're back to the start of the season, really where it was. With Mason Jones scoring 58%, a 30-point night, and not able to get anybody else with more than nine, Daniel Gafford, and Gafford barely touching the ball or barely even getting a shot for the last 30 minutes of the game or so. Lot to clean up for tomorrow, with a quick turnaround for the Razorback men's basketball team tomorrow against LSU when they get back to the court. You got to like at least the rhythm of a sports season that doesn't have to wait a full week after a really bad performance. And now you get a couple of days to prepare and battle against a pretty good LSU team. That was the thing about the football season that was so difficult for all of us, Ty, and I imagine for the guys on the team even tougher.
Then the radio host, yeah, I would venture to say that.
You got to spend 6 days. Well, honestly, for the players at least, they are in practice every day and trying to, I don't know if they're necessarily forgetting about what happened the week before, but they're in preparation. They're studying up on the upcoming opponent, probably more so than worrying about a missed block from the last game or a missed tackle from the previous game. And admittedly, there were a lot of those. It's more about preparing for what's in front of you. For us in the sports media, for the first couple of days each week, we were sort of rehashing what happened on Saturday, as painful as it was. I'm not saying it was more difficult for us. I think we probably had an easier time just talking about it,
sulking about it,
than actually experiencing on your own record a 2-10 season. I don't think that's the case for Arkansas men's basketball, because now they get a couple of days to just try to prep it up and get ready for LSU. We'll preview that game throughout the show today. I want to get into a little bit about this theme from, really you heard it, I guess, mostly after the national championship game, which it's still fresh in everybody's memory just 5 days ago. So much conversation about the togetherness of the Clemson coaching staff versus the newness year after year of the Alabama coaching staff. Of course, the head coaches remain the same. The coordinators continue to be different nearly year after year under Nick Saban, and it's going to happen again. Hey, this is almost like this with the Dan Enos story. He's now going to Miami. He will be the offensive coordinator at the University of Miami. We're journalists again.
Breaking news, like we always do.
Reading it off of Twitter, basically. But the fact is, it was just announced by the Miami football program that Dan Enos will be now the offensive coordinator under Manny Diaz, which is interesting to think about this. Manny Diaz was the head coach of Temple without ever coaching a game for Temple 3 weeks after leaving as the DC for Miami to Temple to be the head coach. 3 weeks later, hired by his hometown Miami Hurricanes, who were stunned by the retirement, the sudden retirement of Mark Richt. And now Dan Enos, I know Mike Locksley, now the head coach at Maryland, formerly the offensive coordinator for Alabama. He had stuck around for the Orange Bowl and for the national championship game. And then presumably Dan Enos got 4 days as the offensive coordinator for the Alabama Crimson Tide. I don't know what you can fix or work on in 4 days. So you got a head coach who was 3 weeks at his last job with an offensive coordinator now 4 days at his previous job. I know Enos had been there for 2 years before as the quarterback's coach, but it is an interesting dynamic. And the thing that you read about and was talked about with Manny Diaz is that he's a great defensive mind. Defense hasn't been the issue at the University of Miami. Offense has, specifically quarterback play. And what did Dan Enos do this past year or the past 2 years working with a couple of quarterbacks, one of them that was close to setting some records for the Alabama Crimson Tide in Tua Tagovailoa, the other, Jalen Hurts. Oh, my goodness. All of a sudden, Jalen Hurts' name is in.
And he on the transfer portal.
The transfer portal, my favorite new term in college sports. And Dan Enos, just a couple of days later, is hired as the offensive coordinator at a place that needs a quarterback.
Yep.
So we can put two and two together.
It's a match made in heaven.
A lot of times I put two and two together and come up with five. I think in this case we might come up with four.
It'll be interesting. I know we've talked to Ryan Fowler and talked to a couple other Alabama beat writers about how a lot of Hurts' development was courtesy of Dan Enos, him coming in being the quarterback's coach, and that he developed a lot under Enos' coaching style and his tutelage. So you wonder if that's in the back of Hurts' mind. It's like, man, I got a lot better under this guy. Now he's an OC, Miami, and I don't know if Hurts has any connections to Miami. I think the kid's from Texas. I would think it's a distinct possibility between Oklahoma, Miami, and probably a few other schools. But if I'm Jalen Hurts, I have to at least give Miami a serious look because my old quarterback's coach is now the offensive coordinator there. And there's talent down there. There's a couple good wide receivers down there. They just haven't. Malik Rozier was not the best quarterback, and that the offense was never the problem. The turnover chain, which Manny Diaz created, was really the whole mantra of that football team. The fact that their defense was the pride and joy of that football team. The offense has kind of been up and down. It would be interesting to see if Dan Enos can kind of resurrect that offense, and if he can bring Hurts in, it's only going to elevate them next year.
Well, it would certainly make a lot of sense out of all the reasons why people come up for where Jalen Hurts or any other quarterback is going to transfer to, you know, whether it's Oklahoma because of Lincoln Riley's track record over the past 2 years, coaching a couple of Heisman Trophy winners that have both been one-year quarterbacks, and then in Baker Mayfield's case, had the best season of any rookie quarterback, and then in Kyler Murray's case, he may even decide to change careers based upon what happens as far as his draft evaluation goes. And Jalen Hurts, I don't know if we even know if he is still a work in progress or not. We barely saw him on the field in a situation for him to throw the ball. And when he did have to get on the field and throw the ball in the second half against Georgia in the SEC title game, he looked like he'd improved by leaps and bounds throwing the football. But it's a small sample, so who knows?
And it's still with the best offensive unit in college football. And when you have guys like Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs, and Najee Harris to hand the ball off to, you can also throw the ball to Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy. I mean, there's studs all over the football field. So then again, you look better than you actually are because of the talent surrounding you. Miami, there is some talent down there, but it's still a drop-off from what he had at Alabama. If he ends up going to Alabama or even in Oklahoma or something, it'd be interesting to see how much of a drop-off Jalen Hurts has. Well, you'll kind of compare the improvement and then drop off because of the lack of talent that's surrounding him, because there will be a little bit of that. Make no mistake. I mean, when you're in Alabama, A.J. McCarron for one point was a Heisman contender. No one should have thought he was one of the best quarterbacks in college football. That was a very good game manager that had some of the best talent in college football around him year after year.
But that's not where Alabama is anymore. Mm-hmm.
They've kind of transcended. Tua's come in and kind of transcend the mindset of an Alabama quarterback. And even though he was unsuccessful in the championship game, the whole thought process moving forward with Alabama football with Tua at the helm, he probably only got him one more year because I'm assuming he's going to go to the draft after that, is this is going to be a pass-happy offense with some really good running backs and really good talent and high-voltage offense. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing because as you're talking, I'm pulling up the web pages on the Alabama and Miami football team websites, pulled up the coaching staffs, and apparently nobody told Alabama that Dan Enos is not on the coaching staff anymore. He is still listed underneath Nick Saban. He's fourth on the list. And as of right now, he hadn't been listed as an offensive coordinator. They'd taken Mike Locksley's name off after the dud that Locksley laid, apparently, in the title game on Monday. But Dan Enos' name is still there. Wait. I look on the Miami coaching staff webpage, and there's Dan Enos' name, right under Manny Diaz as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks. So apparently, at least in the ether of the internet, he's on two different coaching staffs at the same time.
Apparently so. Always trust the internet. That's what I've learned from an early age, is anything the internet tells you is most likely true.
I couldn't help but laugh a little bit because, I mean, how do you even keep track of who's on the staff if you're the Alabama webmaster?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Alabama, Nick Saban's already lost five assistant coaches to other schools so far this season. You have Dan Enos going to Miami, Mike Locksley going to Maryland, Josh Gattis going to Michigan, Brent Key going to Georgia Tech.
And Gattis is still on the website, too.
SIDs, man, they got... I know Kyle Parkinson, if someone left Arkansas, he'd have that thing off real quick.
And, you know, sometimes you got to navigate through the red tape of anything involving university as to who does what and who's supposed to do this and that and where the clearances come from. Sometimes it's a little tough to navigate, but I don't know. I would think that's one thing you're on top of pretty quickly, although maybe you're still just licking your wounds after taking the biggest butt-kicking you've taken in, what, 20 years
maybe
or so.
Saban gave his boys a week off.
You think he... Yeah, I'm sure they got a week off to look for other jobs.
Dabo said that they were going to get ready and get back into it today. Like when he mentioned after the national championship, he was like, we're going to enjoy this till Friday.
You don't even get a full week?
Not even a full week.
Did they even get a chance to go to Disney World or something? I mean,
typically Dabo throws those pizza parties, those coveted pizza parties that Clemson fans can only enjoy and no one else has really had the pleasure of enjoying. Which Chad Morris would throw a pizza party.
You say that with bitterness. We have to remember that this is, that's Ty's favorite food. So if there's a chance to get free pizza, he's the guy. You've read about, well, I forget the coach that actually did this for basketball, for students that were in line for season basketball tickets that, you know, coach sometimes will bring by pizza.
Yeah. Well, they've done that. I mean,
was it Coach Cal at Kentucky?
I don't know if it was Cal. That sounds familiar. But, I mean, Arkansas, I mean, I remember when I was in college, Arkansas gave away pizza, and people were flying. Like, it was a lot. First 500 students get pizza, and I just took a whole box, and then she started walking out and said, you're supposed to take a slice or two.
Why not? I mean, box. Knowing you and in the student situation, I mean, if the pizza fell out of the box onto the floor.
Probably still a 5-second rule.
I mean, you can give yourself a 30-second rule if it's an entire pizza. That's 5 seconds per slice.
Yeah.
Okay?
There you go. That's
I'm
good
trying
math.
To help you out.
It's good math right there.
That's right. Yeah, if you... We can work our way around anything disgusting in a time limit if we think about it hard enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess if Nick Saban thinks about it hard enough, he'll be able to get another offensive coordinator.
We'll see.
I'm sure the resumes are piling up, but it's obvious.
Turnover,
I mean,
man.
You kind of wonder about this a bit because Alabama pays very well for their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator position.
It's hard to work for Saban. Like, we have a good... Like, Tommy's chill to work for. Like, he maybe comes across as, like, structured and barreled in, but, like, he's really relaxed.
He's too busy. He's too worried about that darn bottom line.
Yeah, he's really chill to work for. We have a... Like, I think we have a good working relationship, but byline that you've heard from anyone that's coached for Saban said he's hard to work for. That's just the consistency you hear. And I know Joel Klatt threw the stat out that Clemson's had like two coaches turnover, and Alabama had like 15 or something.
So now you get a Nick Saban coaching tree. That's what happens when coaches leave.
You start a tree. Yeah.
You know, you start a big, I don't know what kind of tree it is, but it's a tree.
Saban tried to hire Dabo back in the day as his wide receiver coach.
Does Dabo have a coaching tree after these years? He's been there for what? It's been 10 years now.
So let's see. Chad Morris, that's one. There's a guy, another one of his OCs who I'm blanking on, I think is coaching somewhere else. But Venables has been with them for quite some time, so you don't really have anything there. I don't know about any of other position coaches, but just from that stat that Joel Klatt threw out there, it wouldn't seem that he would have a extensive coaching tree. But that could very easily the chance. Let's say they win another national championship in Trevor Lawrence's sophomore or junior year. It's hard to imagine the staff would stay so together because, I mean, when you get opportunities, I feel like you have to take them. And Dabo knows that. Like, if a guy gets an offensive coordinator shot as a wide receivers coach or an offensive line coach, I mean, there's times in life where you choose to move on. You got a really good thing going, but there's certain job offers, certain money opportunities, certain living situations that you can't afford to pass up, I think. And you can't let life pass you by. Ferris Bueller.
Just looking back here, I mean, I don't know what Enos would have been paid as the OC at Alabama, but Mike Locksley made over $1 million, $1.2 million last season to be the OC. I assume he's being paid at least a little bit better than that as the head coach at Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that Miami has that kind of money to pay the offensive coordinator unless Alex Rodriguez all of a sudden just jumps in and says, add what you're going to pay him. Here's another $600,000 because I want this guy on the team too.
Drake did a music video down there, so maybe they do. Who knows?
It's funny when you hear about Miami. It's a small school. They don't have a gigantic athletic endowment. It's a small private school.
Coral Gables.
It's much different, but there's a lot of flash still associated specifically with the football team. It's still the baseball team, too, and both of those programs are way past the years where you could say that they are under glory years.
I can't remember if Larinaga is still the coach there or not for the basketball team.
And basketball was always an afterthought at Miami.
Yeah. Did the baseball team go to the College World Series last year?
No, I don't even think they made the tournament, which ended a string. They set a record with, I think it was 36 or 37 wow. straight years going to the NCAA tournament and missed it last year.
Last season. Times change, I guess.
Times do change, and times change for Miami in a football sense, too. But, I mean, if you were to look back into, 20 years ago, a move from Alabama to Miami as the OC might make some sense. Otherwise, this isn't a lateral move. It's a step down for the same position and probably less money, but also knowing that
you don't have a drill sergeant. I mean, I don't know about Manny Diaz's coaching style, but just what I know about Nick Saban, I'm going to assume he's a little harder on assistant coaches based off what I've seen over the years, based on him chewing Lane Kiffin's keister out on the sidelines and based on a lot of other situations where I've seen him throw his headset, yell at Kirby, Smart. Like, there's just multiple situations that are in my head. Now, Diaz was the DC under Mark Richt, who's known to be a little calmer in situation. Now, he gets heated like every other coach, but he was known to have a different coaching style for the most part, it seemed like. So it's going to be interesting how that relationship is, because I think part of it is not having to work for Nick Saban. That has to factor in, I feel like. And that sounds stupid, considering the guy has won so many championships, but when you have that expectation year after year, that adds weight to your shoulders, which you also in turn put on your assistant shoulders to do their job a certain way to set your level of expectations. When you think back to certain guys, and specifically for me, like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, they were incredible practice players. They took every drill intense. They wanted to win everything.
They were tough teammates to play with. But those who could stick around and deal with it ended up with some rings.
Exactly. And so it's the exact same correlation with Nick Saban. If you can deal with it, it's wise to stick around because you're going to reap the rewards, which is the acclamation, the championships and whatnot. But it wears on you, Phil.
working for a boss that you can't stand does wear on you.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to walk into work hoping that this isn't the day that I get my ears chewed out to the point where you can't even see my earlobes any longer. I've worked for somebody like that before. And you do start looking at other places that sometimes don't make as much sense financially or in a career sense, but it makes sense for your own mental health. And perhaps that's the case. Ty Richardson, do your job!
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Matt in Hot Spring.
What's up, Matt?
Well, I don't really have any FOMO Friday, but...
Hey, that's good
I'm going to be
you.
In Fayetteville, Arkansas, so that's good.
You're lucky man, dude. Go watch the Hogs this weekend.
That's where I'd like to be. Won't be able to make it, though.
I'm going
to
try. I got a quick question for y'all.
Shoot.
So, say Chad Morris started to win, like, have a lot of success pretty quick, like some of these other college coaches, do you think there's a possibility that he'd get an NFL NFL offer?
Well, and I guess you're asking that because of the theme a couple of segments ago about all of the NFL teams that are looking for offensively minded coaches specifically. And I think they're not just looking for offensively minded coaches, but guys that work well in the passing game and help develop quarterbacks. So maybe
right.
in that, I mean, it all depends. Maybe it depends on what happens with the quarterbacks at Arkansas over the next couple of years. If they develop, if they turn into, if they improve. And obviously the offense would have to get moving too. As of right now, I mean, it's a big hypothetical because
right.
In this case, you can't put the horse before the barn. The wins have to come.
Yeah.
The success has to come. Arkansas has to look like an offensive powerhouse, I think, for Chad Morris to even have somebody look at him from the NFL.
Yeah.
So first things first.
Yeah Matt, and I would say just to you, just your first concern before like you think Chad Morris is leaving or not is to think if he succeeds at Arkansas. We know the recruiting class is coming in, possibly going to be the best in program history, depending on what happens before National Signing Day, but I mean the jury's still out on them. Like 2-10 first season, I know he was the cupboard he inherited was relatively bare, but I think Arkansas fans just kind of projecting what might possibly happen down the line if he was to have success here, you need to be worried about first if he does actually have success.
I definitely don't really see it happening, but you know it's definitely hypothetical. I appreciate y'all taking my call though.
Yeah, man.
Not
absolutely.
A problem. Make sure you do it again sometime. Thanks for dialing in.
Yeah, for sure.
So he doesn't have any FOMO at all. That's an interesting place to be because I think a lot of times we even if we're in a place that we're happy with, there's some other places that you're thinking about, and I got one first here.
Fire it off.
I'd love to be in Kansas City tomorrow for playoff football for a couple of reasons. One, NFL games are just fun to go when there's a lot riding on it. I've been to some playoff games in Pittsburgh. It's a great atmosphere, and just the nervousness that you feel, the pit in your stomach as a fan. But I would like to be in the stadium where there's more angst amongst the home fans than any other stadium that has a game this weekend. And also because Kansas City's known for tailgating. They got a 3:35 kickoff. To me, that's like a perfect time for getting the right amount of tailgating in, still being able to be upright during the game if you're attending it, and then you still have some time to sort of come down near the at the end of it and fall asleep at a regular time.
You know what the worst was? It was when Arkansas played Texas A&M a couple years back, and that kickoff was at 8 o'clock. Now, 6 is pushing it up. Like, if you just picture yourself as someone who's tailgating, college fan. I mean, you could be any matter of age. And even I'm throwing this out. Even if you're not even drinking, even if you're not partaking.
If you're just standing around talking.
If you're standing around talking, even if you get there late around lunchtime, around like, that is a long day. I remember that was just a long night.
I mean, the 11 o'clock kicks, there's never enough time to tailgate. The 8 o'clock kicks, there's too much time.
Too much time.
I remember when I was a student in Pittsburgh going to Point Park College, which was downtown, I would park across the Allegheny River at Three River Stadium. I just had an internship with the Pirates, and they let me still park at the stadium without paying for
perks,
it.
Man.
It was a nice perk. It was just about a mile and a half walk to campus. But I would park at the stadium, and this was 94. Bill Cowher's the head coach. And, well, actually, this was 96. Cowher's the head coach. You got Mike Tomczak as the quarterback. They had just gotten Jerome Bettis first year. And they're good. They're good. They had Monday night games. When there was a Monday night game at Three River Stadium, I guess everybody in Pittsburgh didn't work that day because they were all tailgating. And my first class would be 9 in the morning, sometimes 8:30 in the morning. There are people tailgating there at 8 in the morning.
Should have skipped class to tailgate with
them. For a 7:30 p.m. kick.
Should have skipped class to tailgate with them, Phil.
Well, I mean, at that point, you got to take 2 days off. Because you got to take the day off to actually tailgate and then the next day to recover. It's
That's
like an extra, adding an extra weekend thanks to Howard Katz, the NFL schedule maker.
I've never experienced a double-day tailgate. Now, I had a cousin that went to West Virginia. My aunt and uncle were telling me about. They said, like, the drinking goes on at West Virginia was the most insane thing. And you're looking at me like you know what I'm talking
My
about.
My sister was there for, I mean, if it was a year or if it was just a semester. So,
I mean,
yes.
I went to Arkansas, and for whatever reason, kids take pride in being an SEC school. Like, we drink a lot because we're an SEC school. And so I've seen, like, what drinking is at an SEC school in college. And so my aunt is like, you have no idea what you've seen. They would tell me, like, kids wouldn't even go to sleep. They would just drink from, like, 12 the night before that Friday night till the game the next day.
I also remember, and I went to visit my sister Lauren one time in Morgantown when she was a student at WVU. Morgantown led the league in couches on the side of the road.
Just, yeah, burnt. Like, it's wild. So if that's definitely on the bucket list is to go there someday.
But going to the Chiefs game, I'd love to be at Arrowhead Stadium for the atmosphere, for the tailgating, and because these KC fans are so nervous, they have no fingernails left. Their teeth have chattered to the point where they've shattered.
It's a good team coming in on
Saturday.
It's
a good Colts team coming in that just schooled Houston in Houston. The Chiefs have had one of these interesting seasons where they've been dominant at times, but still there's question marks
about
them.
No Kareem Hunt. Defense has been a question mark.
And you haven't won a divisional playoff game since before you were born, Ty, since Joe Montana was quarterbacking Kansas City in 1994.
It's been that long.
That's the last divisional playoff game or home game that they won.
Because they lost to the Titans last year after being up early in that game, and they fell apart, and Marcus Mariota was able to lead them back. So I guess that's right. Montana, that is a throwback.
That's right. And the last home win, and I remember this, was an overtime win against Pittsburgh in the wild card. There was a blocked field goal, a blocked punt, and Montana led them to a field goal at the end of it. Then they beat Houston in the divisional round and lost to Jim Kelly's Buffalo Bills. I think that was the fourth year in a row that the Bills went to the Super Bowl and, of course, lost again. So they haven't won a playoff game or a divisional game since 1994. They only have one playoff win in those 25 years.
That's wild. You said 93?
It was the 93 season, so it was 1994.
Yes,
that these the victory X, the one win for KC was in the wild card round at Houston in 2015. They lost to the Patriots the next week. So I don't know. It's just fun to be around angsty fans, especially if you're not one of them. So that's my first.
All right, so I got a text yesterday from Bud Rich, and this is in our Fantasy Football League text, and he said, like this if you will be attending the 2019 draft in Las Vegas, August 30th to September 2nd, Labor Day weekend. I'm looking at packages. Now, Tommy's joked about bringing me down to Vegas because I think he's going to go to some expo for radio purposes, and I have had my issues with gambling in the past before, and I'm like, Vegas wouldn't be good for me. I was joking I'd leave my debit card or credit card at home. But I'm going to have a little FOMO because he said like it, and there's like seven or eight guys that have already liked this message. So I'm either going to be the only one not going or one of only two not going. So I'm going to have a little FOMO, even though I know, like, I feel like Vegas is so – have you been?
Only once.
Okay.
It was
feel
for
like
basketball.
I feel like it's so overblown to me. Like,
well, I think everything about Vegas is designed to be overblown.
That just doesn't appeal to me. Like, there's certain places, like New York when I went, appealed to me. Los Angeles, I haven't been out there, but that appeals to me. Vegas doesn't really. The sports gambling side, that does. But there's just certain, like, paying $80 for two shots or, like, $25 for a buffet or something, that just does not appeal to me, Phil. Like, I'm a simpleton. I'm a simple man who likes simple things. That, for the most part, just never appealed to me. But I will have a little FOMO when these guys are flying out to Vegas, and I guarantee I'll get hundreds of pics and snaps from these yuckos, and I'll have to sit here in Fort Smith with a little FOMO, not going to lie.
I bet you they got a good pizza chicken wing buffet.
They probably do.
They probably have one of the better ones in the country. I think that might be the way to get you there.
Jeez, pizza and wings?
All at the same time. As much as you can eat.
They have good ranch, too. I'd be all in on that.
I got FOMO because I'd like to go back 32 years to the day and be at the Mistake by the Lake, Cleveland, Ohio, Cleveland Municipal Stadium. I did attend a couple of baseball games at that stadium, including the last game that Nolan Ryan ever picked up a victory, but I never saw a football game at Cleveland Municipal Stadium. Many of the Browns fans in the Dog Pound that were there 32 years ago today would probably wish that they had not been there to see John Elway lead the Broncos on the famous drive during the AFC Championship game, in which the Browns led 20-13 with 5 minutes 32 seconds left in the fourth quarter. And John Elway takes his Broncos 98 yards on 15 plays to force overtime, and then moves Denver 60 yards on 9 plays in the first possession of overtime, setting up a 33-yard game-winning field goal, yet again ripping out the hearts of the Cleveland Browns fans. The year before, there was another named failure by the Browns against the same team, Ernest Biner's the fumble at the goal line as Cleveland was driving for what would have been an AFC championship clinching touchdown. And the Browns still have not been to a Super Bowl. And they ain't going to be there anytime soon.
Hey, Baker could lead them. You never know. They almost got a winning season this year.
Almost. Hey, that's 7 more wins they had last year.
They started the season. They have a kicker. They have a winning season. You just like making fun of them because they're in Pittsburgh's division.
Because they're the Browns. Because they're the Browns.
Yeah, but you should.
And until they're not the Browns anymore, then they're always going to be the Browns.
Baker's leading them to the promised land. And I'm not talking about a Super Bowl. I'm talking about a winning season. Because I can't put that investment on that. This one's for you. Back in 2010, retired U.S. baseball star Mark McGwire of the St. Louis Cardinals admits to using steroids in his career.
Why is that for me? You associating me with steroids?
No, it's just a baseball guy because he broke the home run record 98 and you're a baseball guy.
And this was the moment where we all realized how fake it really was. It wasn't fake. It just was juiced up a little bit. It was more than it was really meant to be. But that 98 home run chase kind of helped save baseball.
Yeah, and this was his apology via the AP.
I apologize to everybody in Major League Baseball, my family, the Marises, Bud Selig. Today was the hardest day of my life.
It was very emotional in that interview. It felt real to me. Now, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't watching it live at the time, and I wasn't as into baseball. Still not 100% invested in baseball. I mean, you could probably speak to more what he sounded like, what he looked like during the interview. But I know that was a very important time of baseball history. And the fact that it only happened a mere 8 years ago is kind of interesting. It kind of brings you back full circle a little bit.
It is, and it's become accepted.
Or 9 years
ago. It's become accepted, and because so much of it is because of Jose Canseco's book, Juice, that flashed a spotlight from the clubhouse's perspective, from a player inside the clubhouse's perspective of what had been going on. And McGwire, during the 98 season, would be asked about a compound that he was taking called androstenedione, which wasn't a banned substance then, but it is now. And it was understood that this, what he was using, was helping, but it was also legal. But there were also rumors, plenty of rumors, not just about him, but about other players at that time. And it was just a couple years before Brady Anderson hit 50 some home runs and never hit more than 20 in his career. So things were happening at that point. But the thing with McGwire, it's aside from what this, the idea that he was taking steroids during the 98 home run chase, it's bigger than that because the A's during the 87 season, which was McGwire's rookie year, he actually set a record for rookies hitting 49 home runs in 1987. The year before was Canseco's rookie year. the two of them, Canseco kind of introduced it to McGuire, and it went from there. And he was a user of these, of this PED or other PEDs for almost his entire career. So, and that's the main reason why he is not and won't ever be elected into the Hall of Fame. Not by the writers, you know, under the various auspices of whatever the Veterans Committee is under now. Maybe he gets a look, but it's not just McGuire, Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, Gary Sheffield, Barry Bonds. Some of the all-time great home run hitters, not in the Hall of Fame, but McGuire's 98 home run chase with Sammy Sosa will still live as one of those experiences that always has an asterisk put next to it. And McGuire, I mean, he's had a coaching career since then. I think he was the bench coach at San Diego last couple of years. I'm not sure where he's the next season. So he was at least forgiven by baseball in a way to welcome him back into the fold in a way that Canseco never was or ever would be. Different personalities, and I get that. All right, my third FOMO, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about Dan Enos, now the offensive coordinator at Miami, and they still have on the Alabama website, RollTide.com, they've got Dan Enos listed as the quarterback's coach and associate head coach. And with the butt-kicking that the Crimson Tide took on Monday, and with all the players that have now declared for the NFL draft, and look, I understand, next man up at Alabama means a lot more than next up at a lot of other places. They're still going to end up going into the next season ranked either one or two. But I think I'd like to be at the Mal Moore Athletic Facility, which is the offices where the football team at Alabama has their offices. It's right across the street from the new Joe, the baseball park, and across the other street from Bryant Denny Stadium. But if Dabo Swinney gave his coaching staff up until today off, I just wonder what's been going on at the Alabama offices.
Probably full tilt as of Tuesday.
If Nick Saban's door has been closed, or if it's been open, or if it was yanked off its hinges by its incumbent office holder, it would be a very interesting place to be over the last few days. Probably a little quieter than usual,
I'd probably say. So Hard Knocks was with the Cleveland Browns last year, and if you haven't heard, Freddie Kitchens, who was formerly the tight ends coach? I'm blanking on what he was the coach at, but isn't that, then was the interim OC, and now is the head coach. He's a running backs coach, excuse me, and now is the head coach after being the interim OC. Well, Baker, it doesn't seem like, from clips that I've heard, is not too fond of his new head coach.
You're going to go four wide, Dot. Come here. Hell yeah, put him up there. Hell yeah.
Guy's an idiot.
So that's one. He called him, guy's an idiot, and then this too.
So Freddie Kitchens, our offensive coordinator.
What you see is what you get with Baker.
He's born and raised in Alabama, so he talks like this. Hey, man, if you want to play football, you just got to go out there and do it. I mean, if you love the game, you got to do it.
Yeah, he thinks he's a lot more funny than he really is.
I would love to be in a couple of those film sessions in the offseason, before games. I'm going to have a little FOMO because you know there's going to be a little animosity based on these clips that have been plastered out on social media.
I think there might be a little bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge there.
The first clip I played where he said, guy's an idiot.
I don't know.
The second clip I played, yeah, that's a little ha-ha, fun. But when you call someone an idiot, like I've never called you an idiot since we started working together. Now, that may change down the line. And
you can do that if you want. Anytime you feel necessary, go right ahead.
I don't know if it's wise to call one of your coaches, who at the time he was the running backs coach, right, and then eventually became the interim OC and is now the head coach. I don't know if it's wise to ever call a coach an idiot. That's just me. Like, you will never hear me utter those words about an Arkansas coach unless they just do something so blatant, so stupid that there's no other word that you can use.
My feeling is you probably said the same thing about Hugh Jackson more than one time.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's more than a little animosity there. There's kindred spirits that tried to meet together.
A little bit of despisal going on.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
I think some real hatred. That's okay.
I mean, I'd be ticked too. You were a couple plays away from winning season. You start those first couple games, the Browns have a winning season. Instead, you went with Tyrod Taylor and didn't pan out.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Clutch blood running through Darryl Macon's veins. The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
All right, Brooks, are you there? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's the drive going? We can tell you're in the car.
Yeah, drive's good. Just got back from the American Football Coaches Association convention and went out into Austin to cover kind of another story leading up to this, Saints-Eagles matchup. Both quarterbacks from the from Westlake High, and, just kind of going across the football landscape. So just head back to Baton Rouge.
Well, what went on at the? I hadn't even thought about the coaches' convention. What went on there that might interest listeners here on ESPN Arkansas?
Yeah, well, the main thing that came out of that is coaches are not excited about the targeting. Because a lot of people probably aren't. What they are suggesting, and the AFCA doesn't have any legislative power with the NCAA. I think I should preface that, but. What they want to do is to change things to kind of how basketball is. It's flagrant one and flagrant two. They want to move to targeting one and targeting two, to where incidental non-malicious contact is ruled a targeting one and players are not ejected from games. So it would be more of a 15-yard penalty and you'd move on. And then your targeting two would be the malicious hits, and those are the ones where players get ejected. And they're even saying that to kind of push, to make the push for the case even more, that to show that they're not being soft on targeting, that even players that commit targeting twos more frequently would be maybe even suspended for multiple games. That's an interesting deal, but it's like making another rule for a rule that people are already mad about, and you're asking officials to then also define what is and isn't malicious, which opens a whole another can of worms, probably. But that was one of the more interesting things that came out of the AFCA convention.
That is interesting. And we'll get into basketball in a moment. Was there anything about the transfer rule, which has been the big talk of college football really in the last week, and aside from what's going on the field, all the transfers and the four-game rule, has there been any talk about maybe for the coaches? Because I understand what you're saying. This is a coaches' organization, and they will form an opinion that they'll try to dictate to the NCAA and the rules committees. So a lot of these rules do come from coaches' committees like this. Are they talking at all about transfers?
That's one of the things they're trying to discuss more now. That'll come up in the next year. That was one of the things that they came out of the meeting on Wednesday saying they needed to gather more information and come up with a plan of what they want to do. That's on the future docket. Right now, what they were mostly focusing on was whether they were happy with the early signing period, and they wanted to talk about that. And after its first year, and then, targeting was such a big thing in this past season for many programs that was one of the things that occupied most of their time. I think the transfer rule, as it's happening, is I think we're still seeing it in its first year. October was the first time players have been able to enter into the transfer portal, and I don't think they have enough data or experience to really draw on whether it's successful or not. So, that's something that's coming up in the next year. Although, for the most part, I feel like coaches are somewhat against transfer rules, making it easier for people to transfer program to program because, obviously, they want to be able to control their roster. But there were no comments, I want to make that clear, there were no comments coming out of the AFCA meeting last week in regards to anything with the transfer rule, but it's definitely something they're thinking about in the future.
Brooks, let's talk about the game tomorrow night, Arkansas taking on LSU and Bud Walton Arena. This is somewhat of a rivalry in football with the battle for the Golden Boot. I know a lot of LSU fans don't take it as seriously as Arkansas players, coaches, and whatnot.
LSU is Arkansas's number one baseball rival. I can vouch for that.
Okay.
Right.
Do you think this game is even remotely a rivalry in basketball?
Well, you always need history. And, LSU's the past couple of years trying to build into a more competitive program. And Will Wade has done some of that to advance it. But you need history. You need things at stake. And you know, Arkansas has been, you know, more of a more successful in these recent years. But I think nothing is going to touch what we've seen in baseball, just because both of those programs are at their peak, and so much is at stake. And you really see it in football, mostly because of how much of a high-profile sport it is, and it's been very one-sided on the LSU end for a while. And it really takes both programs being elite to make it as hot a rivalry as it needs to be. And that's what makes this one a little interesting, is that LSU's been on this four-game win streak and coming off a major win against Alabama. And, you know, Arkansas themselves, you know, kind of need this game, too, to, you know, go into this. And, you know, after losing to Florida, they're trying to get some of their own momentum back. I don't know if it's going to be as heated as you'll see in baseball, but, you know, it's not one of those where both of them are highly ranked to where they're super big stakes. And it might change towards the end of the season, but, you know, right now I don't know if it's as major as baseball is.
Brooks, I was listening to Will Wade's press conference a little bit, and he was talking about kind of Bud Walton and how intimidating it is for other SEC schools. And this year, Florida comes in, first SEC game at Bud Walton and wins. And I know it's a lot different than it was under Nolan Richardson, where it seemed like teams who came into Bud Walton never won. Do you think SEC schools, and really any school for that matter, are still intimidated going to Bud Walton to play a basketball game?
Well, I've actually never seen a game in Bud Walton, so I can't draw an experience there, but I do know from hearing about it what people have said, that, you know, it is, whenever it's good basketball, it's a tough place to play. And, you know, even in recent years, you know, it's something that you've started to see Arkansas do. And, you know, I think even with the recent losses, it sounds like there's a big feeling about the Razorbacks this year. And, you know, I think that it's, you know, anybody, and especially, you know, basketball arenas that are, you know, that are tight and you're on top of you, and, you know, people are fired up. I feel like basketball can offer home field advantage in some ways that some stadiums can't and others. But no, I have heard, and from my time in Arkansas, you know, it was always the talk that basketball was a major deal for that program. So yeah, I think it is a reputation that people have up there.
Brooks, LSU is 2 years away from 21 losses and a 2-16 conference record in Johnny Jones's last year. Major improvement in Will Wade's first season. Have they improved enough in the second season to really make noise in the SEC?
I think we're still waiting on that for most of the SEC play to really judge what this program's done. You know, the preseason really hasn't shown what people might have thought. There was some thought that they might make a deep run in the March Madness, and that still could happen. But, you know, seeing losses against teams like Florida State, Oklahoma State, even Houston, you know, those were kind of the games that you wanted to see them progress in to see if they really were going to make a run, and they just didn't win there. Alabama is a little interesting because Bama had beaten Kentucky recently, and you wonder how hot they were to win. But, you know, there's still a lot to see from LSU's end to get those major wins to show that they've arrived. And, you know, it's one of those things that you wonder about in the season. You know, I'm sure y'all know the story. Before the season began, Wade Sims was shot and killed before the season, and he was projected to be a major player inside the team. And, you know, you wonder how that affects the locker room. And a lot of them have been able to talk about it openly, and they've been counseled and have grieved together. And, you know, it's something that carries into the season, you would think. And, you know, And not only that, just what it does to the depth of the team and, you know, the effectiveness of losing a player. And but mostly emotionally, you wonder what that does too. But there's just a lot that goes into this season. But overall, you know, when you're still kind of waiting for that major win from LSU to see what kind of progression they had in the second season.
Get a final thought on baseball, because another poll coming out, Perfect Game and Collegiate Baseball have LSU ranked number one in the country. I mean, last year their season ended in the regionals at Oregon State, and that's just not good enough for LSU fans. So the expectations are really being heaped on Paul Menieri's team, and I think for very good reason with what they've got coming back.
For sure. I mean, you know, LSU is, you know, they've been to the World Series and College World Series enough to where that's almost a bigger expectation than football is. And, you know, they've earned that, and, you know, it's something that, you know, they've kind of built the pieces up to go, and, you know, that's going to get started here in a month or so, and we'll see whether they're prepared to actually make that run.
Is that the situation for fans right now? Is basketball season just sort of a go-between between football, which is tops, and baseball, which, from my experience going to LSU, the atmosphere at baseball games is better than it is at basketball games, and there are more baseball fans there?
Yeah. You know, whenever I moved there, that was the thought, was that football was king, but baseball was something people really cared about. You know, they fill that stadium up and play. Basketball, it's third to those two, and I think some of that has to do with success, and I think it also has to do with just the success football and baseball have. You know, just there's a lot of tradition there, and, you know, winning championships, and you kind of got to do that to grab onto your fan base, and I think that's why people were kind of interested in the season under Will Wade in his second year to see if that's the move they would make. But, you know, for sure, you know, football king, and then baseball, they really do care about it in Louisiana.
Brooks, you're good to do it with us. Thanks so much. Safe drive back to Baton Rouge, and we'll do it again probably during baseball season.
All right, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.